This is Everyday Driver, where we know cars are expensive and necessary and have to do a world of things. But we also believe they should be fun.
Whatever you need and can't afford, we're here to help you find the right car. We're your car friends, your car therapists, and sometimes the bad influence you need. I'm Paul.
I'm Todd, and this is The Car Debate. Hello again, everyone. It is Tuesday. Happy Tuesday. We are in the midst of shooting. I can't even tell you all of the fun we're having shooting right now. We're shooting something we've been trying to get shot for most of this calendar year, and it's been pushed off a couple of times, and it happened to be a comparison that needed a C8. And here's how long ago we planned this shoot. I'm not going to tell you all about it right now yet. And when we first planned to shoot it, we were going to rent a C8, and now we own a C8. So we have our C8 in it, because of course we do. We're in the middle of a very, very fun shoot. So welcome to the podcast. If you haven't seen already, we dropped a really interesting piece on the Prius and the Elantra late last week. We hope you've watched that. We also dropped a piece on the Test Drive channel. The original channel was the Prius Elantra. The Test Drive channel was the standalone of that same Prius. If you'd like to see a test drive of that same Prius, we did it on the 405, which seemed appropriate.
Welcome back to the podcast. We have an interesting topic Tuesday and a cool car debate. But yeah, before we dive into all of that, BMW has released the Clown Shoe again. It is the Shooting Brake Touring Coupe concept. Concept Touring Coupe?
I don't know.
That BMW says was built as a one-off. Sure, it looks like a Z4N Supra wheelbase underneath everything and some bespoke, fresh metalwork at the rear, which is interesting that the fact that they even did this.
Agreed.
Now, they must have needed something to show at Villa d'Este, the concept lawn there, because that's becoming kind of a reveal for BMW, especially. They've revealed that sort of the new M2 kind of look. They've revealed the 2002 there. It's been an interesting place for BMW to come because not every manufacturer comes there. It's usually classic cars. So they've got this thing that I'm fascinated that they're even considering this. But of course, they didn't go far enough. The wheelbase is too short for what they've done. If you lengthen the wheelbase just slightly, proportions resolve themselves, and suddenly
I do see that. That's excellent. Yeah,
works. But the wheelbase is too short. Of course, it's the Cayman
because it's building wheelbase. It on the chassis that they already exist. They have to work
Supra
with that one.
Sure wheelbase. They so they just worked with that. And if only they had gone far enough, then they would have made a business case, and then they would have had to build it. But the way it is now, it just stays as a one-off.
You think so?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Yeah. I'm very curious about it because some of the photos, it looks amazing. Some of the photos, it looks a little off. I think your proportion thing is probably getting to the heart of it. I'm intrigued by it. I mean, BMW, I hate to say it, BMW needs a beautiful car. They need a beautiful
they
car.
They need a beautiful car,
this has
car,
potential.
Don't they?
And you've also mentioned in a couple of our BMW discussions that BMW's styling idea right now appears to be everything. And this has a lot going on as well. I kind of wish it was a little simpler. Yeah. The shape is cool, but I kind of wish it was, I mean, it just feels like it's got a lot of detail in it.
Yeah.
But it is interesting, and I do hope the response seems to have been kind of universally glowing. I hope that leads to BMW deciding they need to build one. I mean, the truth is, you wherever you are, you've probably seen a few Supras. How many Z4s have you seen?
I've seen one.
That
seen
car
one in
seems
City.
To just not get sold. When I see a Z4, I really notice because I've seen maybe enough to count on fingers since they were launched, which is amazing. And you and I travel. It's not like we're just looking in this area.
That's true.
Like even LA, I mean, you would think a Z4 convertible in LA, yes. No.
Yeah.
Rarely.
Yeah, I agree.
So I think it'd be interesting to see them try to do something to get that car to sell. I don't think it would sell to the same people that buy a Supra. I really don't. I don't think that's a crossover market at all. I'd be fascinated to see what goes on with that.
I mean, the lines on this, that shut line for the hood, that clamshell hood that bisects the front wheels, goes up past the door, up above the shoulder line, and turns into the rear spoiler. There's some nice lines on this car, but the wheelbase is too short.
Interesting.
Lengthen that wheelbase just slightly. It doesn't need to be a corner carver. It will inherently. It'll still be great.
Well, but
just slightly longer wheelbase, and then, you got a nice GT, a nice
You're reminding
brake.
Me, though, the problem that we all had with the Supra styling is it was designed for a longer wheelbase, and they had to squish it down to fit on this wheelbase. Now, BMW is fighting the exact same problem.
Oh,
very,
it's
very
wide in the rear. It's nice looking.
And there's some just really cool stuff. Yeah.
Keep things going for BMW. But all right.
This speaking of this reveal has got me thinking about what's happened in the past week for you and I. And that is you were in Hawaii on a press launch.
Yes, I was.
So give us the headlines of where you were and what press launch you were at. Because I'm headed somewhere with this because it's a conversation you and I have been having.
We talked about this on our last episode. This was the press reveal of the Toyota Grand Highlander. The embargo has still not lifted as of this podcast recording, so I won't discuss that. But we were in Kona, Hawaii.
I'm so sorry. I'm weeping for you over here. Yes.
I'm amazed at how many journalists were at this event because it was also the reveal for the brand new Toyota Tacoma.
Yep.
That reveal and all its specs, not including pricing, is all over the internet at that point, and we can talk about it, but apparently the Toyota Tacoma is Hawaii's best-selling vehicle for the last 22 years.
That's so bizarre.
Which I didn't know.
Okay, all right, there you go.
And so everybody was there just to take photos. You couldn't drive the Tacoma. Mm-hmm. You could drive the Grand Highlander, and there is a review coming soon on that. But it was a very nice place to be. I do get it because of the ties to the Tacoma, to Hawaii, and it was very tropical, and there's some good off-roading. There's a lot of mud and different kinds of terrain, volcanoes and sand and beach and mud. And
well, I also think there's the other layer. I'm sorry to be cynical for a minute, but that leads into where we're going. There's also the other layer of, if you release the Grand Highlander somewhere random in the U.S., people be like, you know, I've seen a Highlander. What's it matter? But you go to Kona, Hawaii, and the journalists go, I'll take that plane ticket. I'll go there.
But
what's interesting is you had a lot of conversations with our peers at this event.
I did.
You and I kept debriefing about it.
I told
them
that you were holding down the YouTube fort, that you were feeding the beast of YouTube.
I was editing like crazy. Yeah, yes. Yeah. And that's why we got that Prius piece out last week. And you were there having those conversations. And it bumped into some interesting things.
Okay.
Because... And guys, I mean what I'm about to say here as kind of like a ray of light, a ray of hope. I want to encourage all of you.
Yes.
And us, because whatever your job is, I'm sure it has good days. But whatever your job is, I know it has bad days. And that's true of what we do. We feel incredibly blessed to do this job.
I'm still amazed. Yes.
But it is unbelievable to us, especially at a place like Kona, Hawaii, when you get a bunch of car journalists together, most of what you hear is what's bad.
It's a lot of other launches that journalists have been on and comparing the launches and the food and the hotels and the service, which none of that relates to the cars.
And every single one of those cases, it's a free trip.
It's a free trip. And there's always a balance that you and I really strive for. We cannot speak for anybody else, but yes, it's paid for. Yes, they're not paying us. Interview. They're not paying any journalists, but the trip itself is paid for.
Yes.
And we have to balance that against being honest with you, our audience, and giving our true opinion of what that is like, but not biting the hand that feeds you too, because of course, having press cars runs our business and we get to drive things and compare them, of course.
Yeah.
And we definitely appreciate that. But I still very much look at that as a privilege.
Absolutely.
Getting press cars, but also being invited anywhere is a privilege. And so many people have become jaded. And that is something that you and I have vowed to ourselves 15, 16 years ago when we started this show, that we would never become jaded journalists like the ones we would read about in the magazines. I've driven all the 911s and I'm so bored and yawn. And this is a slight variation of that and whatever. I've seen it all, done it all.
Yeah.
And sometimes you do get the vibe that kind of thinking emanates from certain people.
Yeah.
And I'm just thinking, I'm in Hawaii. Thank you, Toyota. Okay, it's a Grand Highlander. Sure, it's not some hot sports car. But on the other hand, if we're going to drive on some amazing roads, let's not go to Hawaii. Let's go somewhere else.
Sure, yeah.
But wow, thank you. Let me give you my real opinion about this. And Toyota's interested in that, good or bad.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're there to actually talk to each other too. And everybody kind of knows everybody at this point.
To some degree, yeah.
Everybody knows what outlet you are and what you do and you know who's doing what, and everybody has a different approach, but for the most part, everybody's very friendly to each other, and it's fun to talk about the audience and viewership and listenership and what's going on with cars. And of course, complaining can sneak into the conversation, and yet I think I'm eating some very tasty food, and we're here to drive cars, and when I tell people this is what you and I do, They don't have a place in their head to put that file folder.
Not
I don't
at
know
all.
Where what drawer does that go in?
Not there isn't a drawer in most people's heads.
You do what?
Yes.
You just got back from Hawaii, you're going to LA, and then in another week and a half you're going to Germany to do what now?
Yeah. It's crazy.
It's all due to you, our audience, our viewership and our listenership. We thank you tremendously.
And we feel very, very blessed that you guys are with us and have made this podcast a thing and you engage and all
you're
of that.
You're right there with us.
For sure.
We're thinking about you constantly when we're shooting video, when we're talking to the camera, speaking on the podcast. You are there with us as if you're part of the conversation. We want to dissect, oh, look how crazy this, look, that's a cool feature. But we have to remember always to let ourselves be wowed. It's so easy in any industry. Yeah, let's put cars aside.
Absolutely. That's the key thing I want to get
to. You're just not wowed by anything anymore because you've been in that industry for so long, whether it's design or furniture and engineering or marketing and sales and whatever. I've seen it all, been there, done it all. And in no way do I want you and I to become jaded. It's something we have to work at.
Well, yes, absolutely. And there's a history in my family of people getting dark, for lack of a better way to put it. People becoming Eeyore. Where they just, you ask them how they're doing and they'll tell you everything that's wrong first. And as an adult, I started to see that pattern emerge in me. And I'm not saying I always get it right, but I have tried, actually mentally tried to arrest that and to not allow it to be the way that I view the world. Because it's very easy to do. And I want you guys to understand that there's a lot of stuff about what we do that's amazing. Mm-hmm. But I also want you guys to understand this is kind of a 7 day a week, 365 job.
Sure.
The number of times that I have had like, a day when I didn't do anything for the show, I could probably count on a hand or so in the last 15 years. I didn't do anything for the show, really? Yeah. You know, you may have a job where you do 9 to 5, and that may be terrible, but at 5 o'clock, you may go home and never think about your job again.
You leave your
work. Or you may have a 24/7, who knows? Yeah. But the point I want to make on all of this is I just want to encourage you guys because Paul and I have been this week encouraging each other. Mm-hmm. I want to encourage you guys to find the things that bring you joy. Yeah, we get a lot of joy out of this job, but we also get a lot of joy out of mountain biking and living in Park City. And I get joy, even though also I get frustration, out of walking my dogs, you know, or hanging out and playing a video game with my son. I mean, whatever it is, I want you to find the things that give you joy. And I want you to lean into those and think about the good stuff and not the bad stuff, because we sometimes get into a circle of people who are just like, everything everybody said about this is terrible. And it's not that bad.
Right. Or if you have a different opinion about something, allow yourself to have that opinion, back it up with why.
Sure.
Certainly extrapolate everything that you're coming from, all that position. But I read on YouTube comments sometimes like, well, you two are the only ones who feel this way about that car. 90% of the journalists feel something else. I'm like, okay.
Yeah, and?
and your point would be what? We backed it up with solid commentary, with good reasons.
Hopefully, yeah.
Here's why we think that way, and we gave you some good stuff. And let's talk about it. Let's discuss it. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, we all love cars. Cars are awesome.
Yeah. Cars are a fantastic gateway that all of us can. And we talked about this on Discord. We've talked about this on our meetups. Cars are this fantastic thing where it crosses so many other boundaries of ideology and religion and political beliefs and budget.
That's what's wonderful.
It crosses so many things. And it's one of the things we love about it. We thank you guys for being with us on this. I mean, I'm sorry, it feels like this is getting preachy, but the big thing I want to say is just, I want you guys to find joy in life and to find the things in your life that give you joy and look at that more than you look at, because look, Paul and I could sit here and rant and tell you the bad things. And I'm not saying they wouldn't be legitimately bad things, but it's easy to find darkness.
Find that joy and remember why you got into the business that you did, that thing that you did. And if you don't like it, if there are no checkboxes for joy and there is something else, I want to encourage you to go pursue that. That's what you and I did.
Yes. Well, that was the thing. You and I have joked about this before. Before we were actually doing this show full time, we each had other jobs that we were good at. And the people respected us in those jobs.
Yeah.
But anytime conversation in those jobs would lead to anything about this show, when we would get done with that conversation, people would be like, you really light up about that. You really get excited about it. So we're thrilled that we can do it full time.
Yes.
But you know, this may be you only see darkness with your kids or your spouse or whatever. It is easy to find, especially feel like in the modern time. Mm-hmm. Modern time with social media and post COVID, we're always looking for the cloud.
That's true.
Where is it? You know what I mean? I'm like, but there is good stuff. Turn around. The sun's over there. You know? So anyway, yes. It's been on my brain because you were in Hawaii of all places and you were sharing some of the conversations you were having with other journalists who were just kind of sullen.
Yeah.
And it was like, also I wasn't in Hawaii. So it was letting me see it with a different perspective. I was like, they're angry in Hawaii on a free trip? They're angry? Really?
Like delicious food and you went snorkeling and you got to drive some cars. Okay, they're not the most hot things ever. That actually kind of leads into our topic Tuesday.
It does, yeah. Because we're just dreaming a bit, yeah.
Yeah, we will.
It's a new year, and we want to talk to you guys about a lot of new products from our friends at Griot's Garage. I'm going to start with the 3-in-1 wheel, tire, and mat cleaner. Did you hear it? It cleans wheels, tires, and mats with one thing. It's a non-acidic formula that cuts brake dust, road grime on wheels, tires, and rubber floor mats. They have a cool picture of you using a brush to clean all of the above. That is awesome. Water spot remover. Guess what that does? That removes water spots on all exterior surfaces.
Don't forget ceramic metal polish, which restores and brightens and protects common metal surfaces and leaves a finish like you've never seen before. And then there's the Citrus All-Purpose Cleaner, a concentrated, powerful, non-foaming cleaner for both exteriors and interiors. Griot's Garage products are 100% guaranteed, and all liquid products are made in the USA. When you're ordering at griotsgarage.com, use the code EDRIVER for 15% off liquids and 10% off everything else on your order. That's Griot's, G-R-I-O-T-S. Enjoy the finest quality car care products you can buy at griotsgarage.com. This Topic Tuesday that I speak of is dreaming about a five-car garage. Money no object from Matt Guerra 82 on Instagram.
This is great. It's a great question.
Matt, I really thought that we should turn this into a Topic Tuesday because it's a longer conversation, and it's easy to dismiss this. It's easy to say, well, why would you just let yourself dream? Why would you let yourself say money no object? Why would you? It was actually very informative for me because
even I kind of liked it too.
Even with money no object, I thought, I don't have Bugatti Chirons on my list.
Interesting. Okay.
I didn't choose Koenigsegg anything. And okay. Money no object here, Matt is giving us an unlimited budget.
Yeah, that's good.
And
that's
I wasn't way out there. I thought, does having that extra thing, even with all the cars we've driven, having the hot thing, even with a $3 million car, I thought, would I even drive that?
Interesting.
I'm not sure I would.
Well, that's the thing. He gives us five different categories. Here's the trick that Matt gave us, which is actually really good. He said each car has to fit one of the following categories: a city dedicated car, a family hauler, a lightweight sports car, a personal pride GT car across continents, and a track dedicated weapon. So maybe not even street legal. Those five. His question is, what is our car in each of those five? And then he's also curious, what's the final money tally? He wants to know where we land financially. This is total dreaming. It's dream car garage stuff. But I like that it has parameters. It's not just give us your dream garage. It's fill these five categories. And the way I did this is I restricted myself to cars that you either can buy brand new right now, or if they're not for sale right now, brand new, they're only a couple years old.
Okay,
so
fair enough.
I stayed really current so that I knew what the prices were.
Mine were pretty new, yeah.
So I didn't go like, I'm going to get a bunch of classics. I who knows what those cost, if they'll run, whatever. So I stayed new. And I have my hero of each one, but I have my two runners up.
For each category?
For each category. That kind of show you how I got to my winner.
Okay. I like this. This is interesting.
I'm excited. This was really fun, Matt. Thank you.
Well, I also added up the horsepower at the end, too.
Oh, I didn't do that. That's good. You probably killed me on that because you're a horsepower
guy.
We'll see. I love that. That's good.
We'll see. And I also actually added a sixth category because at this Hawaii event, I got into some great conversations with Roman at TFL.
Oh, sure. Okay.
In Denver, a TFL truck. And he told me about a particular truck that I went home and looked it up and I thought, I want one of those, too. So,
what?
Matt, I added, that's going to be car number six.
Okay. You've added a truck. All right. Good.
He told me about it because I mentioned Earth Roamers.
Uh-oh.
And he said, oh, let me tell you about Earth Roamers and then this other thing. And it was like, I was vaguely aware of it, but then he's driven it and he knows all about it. And I thought, oh, you know what? If we're doing this, let's go ahead and add a six. So that's the extra credit out here.
When we do our financial tally of who spent the most money, we can exclude the sixth category since I didn't do that.
We will. We
spent a lot of money, but
I'll give you the financial tally for both.
Okay, good.
Both including. But let's jump right into car number one, which is a city car to run errands in town. And I chose a Toyota GR Corolla Circuit Edition.
Interesting, because that's one of my runners-up.
No kidding.
I thought it was on your list, too. City car, like the errands car, I thought, okay, I'm going to sit in traffic. I'd like to get halfway decent gas mileage. It's got to be somewhat versatile. But something like a GR Corolla would be amazing for that. But then I thought, hang on. Even though the GR Corolla would be amazing, and I love that, what I probably should get in that scenario is a Chevy Bolt.
Okay. Okay.
For the actual like city commute car, probably something like a Chevy Bolt. So then that led me to my winner, the Prius, the brand new Prius.
Really?
For a city runaround errands car. Why not?
The Prime or just Prius Limited?
I don't know. That's interesting. I hadn't actually thought about it. I put 38 grand worth of budget in there for that.
I mean, the Prime has two extra horsepower.
It does. Well, no. The all-wheel drive has the two extra.
The all-wheel drive has 20 extra. You're right. It does.
The Prime actually can peel the tires.
You're right.
So, maybe. Actually, you know what? Maybe the Prime. But either way, the point is the brand new Prius. Because if we're really talking about a dedicated city car, why not?
Well, Well, there is a through line to all of my choices.
Not surprised.
And as we get through, you'll hopefully see it at the end. I'll tell you anyway.
Okay, good.
Hopefully you can see that through line. And I wanted something good for parking. I mean, it's a Corolla.
Yeah. There's not a single thing wrong with your Corolla.
Great ski car, great mountain bike car. Yep. Could put mountain bikes on the roof. It's got space for people and gear and luggage. And it's just small and lightweight and fun and snorty and still a looker in the parking lot. Like, what is that thing? Well, let me tell you.
I would have wheels on my Prius, and I would have it in a color.
Yes.
And then, but here's the other thing about it, is it gets dinged in a grocery store parking lot. I'd be like, huh.
True. I wouldn't love the ding. I'd still do qual parking.
I wouldn't love it, but I'd just be like, okay, the Prius got dinged. All right.
Okay, so you budgeted $38,000?
It was $38,000
yeah. Mine was $42,900. That is according to the price on Toyota's website.
I get it. Yeah.
That's all I can do. That's all I know.
Yep.
Going on to car number two, which is the family hauler for long distance trips. Hands down, no other choices. Okay. Well, maybe there's other choices. It's the Mercedes AMG GLE 63S, and I loaded it up.
The E,
the not the GLE. S.
Okay, all right.
63S, $140,735, because I gushed over that thing. And as good as Cayennes are, I love Cayennes too, but this now has wormed its way into my heart.
They are really cool.
The noise, the sound, the Mercedes, I love.
I think you and I are going to have a lot GLE. That have a little bit of overlap. My two runners up get close to that.
Okay.
My runner, because here's the thing, I'm thinking family hauler long distance trips. So what I'm thinking in that regard is I need 7 usable seats. Mm. I want towing capacity. I want lots of space for people and gear and stuff and maybe even towing. And I want to feel like the seats are comfy and it has every bit of tech and air conditioning and all the stuff. Okay. So I thought Mercedes GLS, but then I thought, yeah, and I really love that in the AMG form. We've raved about it. I really love that, but I'm really thinking family hauler. Let's get more space from the GLS, which led me to the Suburban. But then I merged them for my winner, which is the Escalade ESV. Now, I didn't get the V.
Oh, really? Not
I didn't
the V.
Get the V. I just got the ESV because the V is funny, but the V is also pointless. So I'm actually thinking about family hauler. So the Escalade
That's
ESV.
What's so great about it.
Loaded
it's
out,
so pointless.
$110,000. It still has the big V8 in it. It just doesn't have the ridiculous V8.
Right. It's still plenty powerful. Yeah.
Great screens, great seats, lots of space, big American hauler Escalade ESV.
Wow. All right, moving on to car number three, which is the lightweight sports car. There were a lot of choices in here, and I could go a lot of different directions.
Agreed. Uh-huh.
But again, money no object. If we got some money to spend, then let's spend it. But I didn't go crazy with Chirons and Koenigseggs and Paganis and way out there with Hennessy Venoms, all the crazy stuff that you could buy, because I think they'd sit. I'd almost have to yes, you'd want to drive it.
Yeah.
But you'd be cautious, I don't want anything to happen to it. It would own you, and I want something that I can, just as pretty and beautiful and interesting and still compelling to drive, and I wouldn't worry about it.
Okay.
So I decided on a Maserati MC20 in blue Corsa.
Whoa.
With tan saddle interior and bronze wheels. I'm customizing just a tad.
Yes, you are. Good.
The Gran Turismo Trofeo in blue Nobile with bronze wheels also made the list. My runners-up included the AMG GTC. Mm. And then I went back to a Porsche 959 or a Ferrari 550 Maranello. But I don't know how lightweight a Maserati MC20 is in terms of lightweight, super lightweight sports cars, but that would do pretty well because the power is so delightful.
Your definition and mine are not the same, but that's a great answer.
Sports car, it's Italian, it feeds my Maserati love. Mm-hmm. I have to have a Maserati somewhere on my list. Mm-hmm. It's almost required now at this point, and I just need it. So MC20.
Okay. Lightweight sports car for me, Pleasant Canyon Drives. This was something that has great dynamics, that has to weigh under 3,000 pounds, that I also don't have to worry about.
Okay.
Rocks, animals, I just don't have to worry about it. It's just going to run
animals,
and be good.
Personal safety.
No, I still want to duck this stuff. But I'm just saying, if the unexpected happens, I'm still in something that's lightweight and not the moon and all that kind of stuff. And so my runners up... Stay with me because there's a through line I come back to later. My runners-up were the MX-5 RF, which I love but don't fit in.
Yeah.
I'd love to have one of those. And my Elise was a runner-up.
I was going to say, your own car that you own.
It's a runner-up because you can't buy it new anymore. That's part of the reason it's a runner-up. And also, the Elise, it still takes some thought. You're still in a lease. If you crack a body panel or a light or a whatever, that's hard. It's a hard car. Something goes wrong. So I landed at $33,000 for a GR86. Lightweight, canyon running, go anytime sports car, GR86. Done.
It's way up there. It's superb.
You told me just, we're going to do an unexpected, we don't know how it's going to go down, canyon drive. What are you taking? I'll just take that. I know the keys to that are going to work.
Yes, I would always take that. But the problem is we've got money to spend. I'm trying to spend some of this pile of cash.
I'm going to spend some. But I went $33,000 for a GR86.
Okay, so the MC20, I'm estimating by the time I loaded it up, it said, request a quote, push the button. I'm not going to request a quote.
$250,000, $300,000.
I'm going about $300,000 all the options because I got a carbon fiber spoiler and I got the carbon exterior package.
Yeah, yeah.
And I got the carbon interior package and I wanted it. Italian, I want that sound. I want the car.
Okay.
$300,000.
That's good. That's good.
Moving on to something that is personal pride, a GT to cross countries in style, car number 4. I went shopping for a Porsche 992 GT3 Touring manual.
Oh, interesting. All right.
In Ruby Star. I love that Ruby Star. I'm going to put the bronze gold wheels on that. And I found one for $264,000. 264, 260 is the final price. It's for sale now. Manual, Ruby Star, GT3 Touring. Personal pride, that would be my jam.
I have a weird answer on this one.
Okay.
Because I suspect that a car that I really want for the GT car, personal pride, cross-country car, is something I haven't driven yet. So because of that, I've got it in the runners-up column.
Okay.
I want you guys to know that the runner-up, one of these runner-up cars that I haven't driven yet, might actually be the winner after I drive it, but I haven't driven it yet.
Okay, fair.
So my runners up for cross-country GT car, and I'm thinking, okay, the point of the car, hopefully it's dynamic, hopefully it's fun, but the point is also you're going to be in this a lot.
Yeah.
Okay? So Lexus LC500 is a runner up for me.
Really?
Because this isn't my area, but it's a fantastic at that.
It's sweet looking too.
And it's amazing looking. Yeah, so there's that. My other runner up is the car that might win after I drive it.
Okay.
And that's the Lotus Emira.
Ah, yes.
That might be the ultimate car for me. That might, and I don't know, it has so many more GT, so much more GT feel than my Elise does.
Yeah.
And we're going to road trip and I'm going to take my Elise this year and I'm going to suffer for the parts that aren't fun. I would love to have that Elise feeling with less suffer on the unfun parts. I'll take my headphones. Yeah, for sure. But if the Emira can merge those two, then it would win here. But the one right now that wins, long distance tourer, is the Mercedes GT.
Those are awesome.
$130,000 is what I allotted, which would get me more than an Emira by the way, if I need one. But the Mercedes GT wins because I've driven that and I know how good it is and how much I like it. I like it more than the LC500. And it's like a GT car. I'm taking the Mercedes AMG GT. That car is menacing sitting still. It's fantastic rolling and it's great to be in. So I'm going there.
This car number 5, which is a dedicated track car, your track weapon. Mm-hmm. I waffled a lot on this. The problem is that I've already chosen a 911 as the personal pride car. And I have to have a Cayman in my life.
Okay.
I love Caymans.
Yeah.
They're my jam. So I chose the GT4 RS. I'm done. That's my track weapon.
Well done. Well done.
$250,000. And so now that I've said that, do you see the through line? Through every single one, GR Corolla, then the family haulers, the AMG GLE 63S, the Maserati MC20, GT3 Touring, and now the GT4 RS. Every car here is designed specifically to be tracked, including that SUV. It has track mode. So technically, every single one of my cars could be tracked.
Okay. All right.
That is the through line.
Bravo. I have a dedicated track car. I did not have a track-related through line. That's very good. I thought dedicated track cars. I thought about two things that I know I would thoroughly enjoy, and I've driven them and have enjoyed them, etc. But you'll see how it leads to the winner. Spec Miata'd be cool. I like slow car fast, but that's a little too slow, I think. I'd like to have something that can gun down the big dogs and they don't expect it. And a Spec Miata, well driven, can gun down
it
a lot of stuff.
It certainly can, yeah, yeah.
But there's always somebody with more power and they're just going to walk. So that's the problem with the Spec Miata. I thought about a Spec Racer Ford. We've driven those and loved them.
But
I would even like my track car to have more than one seat. I don't want to be I don't mind tracking alone, but I'd like to take somebody with me too.
Sure.
I'd like to have the option. So I landed here. I know you were probably surprised listening in that I did not pick an Elise earlier, and that's because here I'm picking the Exige V6 Cup. They just stopped selling it. That is my car.
That's special.
With bigger, kind of wider bodywork, and the V6 from the Evora, the Camry motor. With close to 400 horsepower.
That's a track weapon.
That is my track weapon. And the only way you could buy them in the U.S. is as a dedicated track car. I am going Exige V6 Cup. I get the Elise experience and more as my dedicated track car. And I have an extra seat for those of you that want to come along.
So I've got two Porsches. You've got two Lotai.
Well, and here's the thing. If the Emira is good enough to work its way into cross country, then yes, there'd be the Lotus there.
Most
as well.
Of my cars are from Stuttgart right now.
I got two Toyotas. I've got a Mercedes, a Cadillac, and a Lotus. That's a good mix.
That's
I like
a good
my
mix.
Yeah.
All right. So what's your total?
My grand total is approximately, for those of you that are going to write me a check, $411,000.
Mine was $997,895.
Who's surprised that Paul's budget is twice mine? Anybody surprised?
I added the horsepower between all five cars.
Did you really?
It is 2,549 horsepower.
It's very good.
So on to this car number six. I decided, Matt, to add what truck?
Okay.
What truck would you have? Because
good.
There wasn't a dedicated, real off-roader.
An off-roader, yeah.
And there
is
a plethora.
There's a ton
of truck choice out there.
There's a whole section of SEMA that is just that.
It's just trucks.
Mm-hmm.
So as I was saying, I was discussing all this with Roman, and I said, you know what? I just want an Earth Roamer. I don't know why. I can't afford one.
Your bug out house, yeah.
Used ones are $600,000 to $750,000.
Used.
Those are the small ones because the big ones are $1.5 million. So we start talking about the chassis they were built on and the Kodiak and the Top Kicks and all the F650 and 750s.
Yeah.
And then he said, well, have you driven an AEV Prospector XL? You know, the company AEV, the off-road tuner, they're taking Ram trucks and re-engineering because they move the front axle. They're entirely re-engineered. So it's the Prospector XL from AEV, and they're putting 40-inch tires on these things.
I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah. He said, this truck won't care about anything you throw at it. And it's got the Cummins diesel in it. And he thinks, it's the price of the truck. They're also certified as a builder because they're re-engineering everything. They're not just doing body kits or lift kits or anything. They're moving chassis components and re-engineering the entire truck. And so it's about, $80,000-$90,000 for the truck. And then they'll do all their stuff for probably in the neighborhood of $150,000-$160,000. You can put a camper shell in the back.
Unbelievable.
This thing is awesome. I want a Prospector XL. I don't know what I'm going to go do with it.
Sure, I get
but
it.
I just thought, if we're going to have a pickup truck in there, this thing is just sitting there. It'll be like, yeah, I win. I win. I don't care. I win.
I was going to pick the TRX because I just inexplicably like that truck, and I'll stay there. But I see your AEV. That's a really, really good one.
So that brings my new total to $1,157,895. Dollars.
I'm a bargain.
You're a bargain.
I'm often a bargain. At 400 grand, I look cheap.
I'm just spending the money. But then again, Matt, I looked back at this list and I thought, all these are not crazy,
neither
hyper,
one of us
super...
picked hypercars. You're right.
I mean,
that's
these
a good point.
Out there. $300,000 for a Maserati. That's a pretty expensive,
ridiculous,
high-end Italian brand, but it's not something bespoke from Hennessy.
Well, I didn't pick a Pagani Huayra.
I didn't wander over to Rematch and decide, you know what, I need a 1900 horsepower something, or a Pininfarina Battista, or none of that really appealed to me because they're so hyper expensive, and they do get driven somewhat, but they're just, they're such a showpiece. It moves beyond being inviting to drive, I feel like. And these, I could just have fun with all of these. So anybody have $1,157,895?
Yeah, just a quick donation.
I am your guy.
Well, that's the thing. If you add me to it, then it's a clean $1.5 million and we get all our cars.
Clean 1.5.
There's no way to write that off. You just gave it to us for the fun of it. But anyway, so that happened. It's good to dream, though. Josh is writing in for he and his wife. And the big question here, which is a bit loaded, Josh, is there a path to automotive happiness?
Wow.
And first off, I want to say that the path changes. You know?
Yes. If what, you heard, we need 1.5 million. Yes. And there is the path. Uh-huh. So, there so, it lies. So if your path,
whatever the answer is now, will change later, and that's okay.
That's true. Well, Josh is a big gearhead. He goes to shows. He follows the industry, and he's taken a track driving course. Josh, excellent work.
Awesome.
Fantastic. Despite that, they drive a 10-year-old Subaru Forester and a 30-year-old Toyota pickup. It's great for short trips and adventures. He says both are in good shape. They do their job well, but he needs something more. So Josh started looking into a new family car that would be bigger and nicer and more interesting than the Forester.
Okay.
He drove a BMW X5 plug-in. He says, great vehicle, but probably too nice for two young kids and a dog. Maybe.
Probably.
A Lexus RX 500H. He says, same, but a little bit too small. He recently drove, he writes, the CX-90 from Mazda. That's brand new.
Yeah, it is.
He says, great driving experience, but not much else.
Interesting. Mm-hmm.
And a Honda Pilot. He liked the Pilot, but as they got closer to making a decision, something wasn't feeling right. It was just another good family car, but not that interesting.
I see that, yep.
Now, his wife is not a car person, but has great taste overall. They swoon over the original Defender 90s. So okay. Impractical.
Yeah.
They love G-Wagons. He says older ones are the same issues as Land Rovers. Newer ones will eat a down payment on a house.
Easily. And then ask for more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He says, oh, I like your taste. Gorgeous machines like the Porsche 356 and the Volvo P1800.
They're gorgeous. They're fantastic gorgeous. Classics. Yeah, for
but
sure.
None of those fit any part of their life right now. And he also can't stop looking at BMW 1 and 2 series, older 911s, and similar driving machines for weekend fun and maybe getting into track days.
Okay.
So they're stuck. They need something comfortable for road trips, skiing, camping, hauling kids, and friends around, which means 7 to 8 seats. Mm-hmm. And what they dream about, something beautiful to look at, a great driving experience. And Josh's friend keeps pushing the minivan, but he and his wife can't bring themselves to do it.
So the thing here is you're asking for two completely divergent ideas.
Yeah.
We need a 7 to 8 seater. And by the way, we'd like something incredibly gorgeous and very fun to drive. There isn't an equal sign. I'm sorry, but that's
I've got something maybe that's close.
Really? Okay, good.
I think I might have something.
What's interesting is they've got maybe as much as 60 grand to spend, and they could possibly push more because they've listened to this podcast at least once. They're not in a hurry, and their current vehicles run. You know, they have, and they do have space for 3 cars, which is interesting. So they have this old truck, they have the Forester. They could actually end up with 3 cars.
Hmm.
Should they sell the truck? What's the path to automotive happiness? I have a few different ideas, but my big headline for you and your wife, Josh, is I think you need to embrace more than one car for what you're asking this to do. You're getting rid of the Forester and asking for 2 divergent paths. Let's get 2 completely different cars.
Now, this vehicle that I speak of,
okay,
the one car that does, I'm scrolling back up here on your email, Josh, where you're talking about camping and hiking and taking people around, you know, skiing, hauling kids. 7 to 8 seats, huh? Well, I've got one that is like a 6 to 7 passenger.
Okay.
And it does all the rest of that stuff.
Okay.
With the driving dynamics you're looking for, but it ain't 60 grand.
Is anyone surprised?
The good news is it's only $73,000.
Okay.
It is the Acura MDX Type S.
That is a good one. That is good.
Yes to that. The seats are brilliant. It drives great. It's got gobs of power. The back seats actually do have some space to them because it's an MDX.
Yeah.
And you get it in that yellow, gold, orange color, that tangerine metallic.
Yeah.
That's cool looking.
The color that we had on our press launch when we have it on the test drive.
Don't get the white interior because
because why?
Kids and dogs and white interior. Dogs.
You're a human. Don't get a white interior. That's all bad. You want to use the vehicle? Don't get a white interior. On the show stand, it looks awesome.
It does.
Anywhere in real life. Like, get in and out of a white interior car while wearing blue jeans. Just get in and out on your normal day and at the end of the day, just be bummed. Like, oh, well, that seat's blue now.
Totally.
Yeah. Don't get white. Stop.
But still, this MDX would be... For all those great things that you're talking about, that could come close. But like Todd said, I don't think you should just go for one car.
Mm.
I think you should sell the Forester immediately. If you haven't already sold the Forester, please sell the Forester. With your budget, you talk about $60,000, let's go less. Mm. Things like the Honda CR-V Hybrid Sport Touring, which just came out on our test drive channel. Yeah, pretty impressive for $40,000, but it's only a 5-seater.
True. All of that's true.
The Nissan Pathfinder is the next step up to more people carrying, but it's not dynamically a sports car. It's great for all those things. It's not a minivan. cool SUV. We like it a lot. We also like the Telluride with the X-Pro package. We just had that. That on a podcast a few episodes ago. Really love the Kia Telluride. Really excellent. And then if you're wanting really something capable, Toyota Sequoia or a Suburban, if you really want to step up and you do need the people hauling capability. So I'm thinking about staying somewhere in there. You've got drive homework now to look at Pathfinders, look at CRVs, really determine. And that Telluride, sure, seven people. Seven will be a squeeze. Six is doable.
Yep.
Yeah, somewhere in there to keep the price down to hopefully $40,000, $50,000. And then once you've sold the Forester and made 10 grand, you've got 20 left over, maybe now 30 to spend on an additional fun car. Now is the time you go looking for BMW Z3s and 986 Boxsters and things that interest you. Sure, you could go to track. You could do something Miata flavored. You could do a GR86 at that point. That's when you do the separate car for, you've got the three cars. You solve this by selling the Forester. Because from your email, I don't get the idea you wanted to sell the Tacoma. I think you have
ideally,
a,
he doesn't
I think it's a Tacoma.
Truck.
You just said Toyota truck.
Yeah.
But you don't want to sell it. 30 years old, it's fine, but you're still getting lots of offers for people who want it, and you could probably make money on it. But keep that truck. It's good at what it does. It's paid off. That's a part of your family. That's like the family dog.
Yeah.
And then now you've got 20, 30 grand for something extra. Shoot. GR86. Go buy yourself a GR86.
Sure.
You can track
enjoy it.
You can
Oh,
man.
It's
and then
brand new and going to run. Yeah.
I'm seeing like a Pathfinder plus a GR86. Some kind of recipe like that.
I like it. I've got a few options here, but they align a lot with Paul. The big thing I want to say to you, Josh, is let's put that, obviously the Forester's going, but let's put that Toyota pickup on the bubble. That's a term from the film industry. Your TV show is about to be canceled. You're on the bubble. Okay. This is where that comes from. Let's put it over there. And my question for you is, how many times are you going to drive that truck in the next year? If you're not driving it at least once a quarter, it goes.
Are we selling everything?
No, I mean, maybe, okay. But that's the thing. I don't want you to sell it now. I want you to just take note of its usage, because if you don't end up using it much in the next year, you may as well get the money out of it. Okay. If you use it fairly regularly, then yeah, keep it. It's there. It's old. It runs. Why worry about it? So right now it stays, but we're going to be watching that truck. That's all I'm saying. I've got three options for you, and they're all, you'll see it's the combination of two cars at once is to really, that's how you have to solve this, Josh. You're getting two completely different ideas. I do like your MDX Type S, Paul.
That's
a pretty good merge
there.
And close to the budget. I do think that's excellent. But in reality, Josh, I'm sorry. Tough love time. What you want for all of this hauling is a minivan. I'm sorry to be another person to say it, but if that really is what you're wanting, the utility of a minivan, nothing beats the minivan. But I understand it's not fun. Now we have our friend locally who put, I think, sway bars and PS4s on his minivan, it was the AS4s. It was the all season performance and coilovers. And he was like, now it's acceptable. He tracks a lot. So he was like, now it's acceptable.
He didn't track the minivan to our knowledge.
But I will say what was funny is one time, he's a good friend of ours. Thank you, Greg. But one time we actually had him drive a camera vehicle on a racetrack to help us. And he was wishing for his minivan. Because it was like, at least I've solved the body roll and the grip problem. So you could go that route, Josh, and then you'd have a minivan to surprise everybody. But that is the thing. Nothing beats the usable space of a minivan. So you could get one of those for 30 grand. I know you don't want to do that. I've got other options for you. But I hate to bring the reality there. Kids, dogs, dirt, people, hauling, mess. Minivan. That's what it does best. Anyway. Could get a used one. That's the thing. There are minivans out there that are used. You can get them for pretty cheap. And then you don't have to worry about it. There is that reality. I liked your Telluride, Paul, but I went Hyundai Palisade.
Oh, did you?
Okay. I think it feels classier in there. Kind of a little bit easier to find, too, which is interesting. So
yeah,
Hyundai
true.
Palisade I really like. You know what truck I thought of, though? The family hauler. It's not as roomy as some of these others, but we drove it in a couple flavors. We've driven it in the super big boy flavor, but also the standard flavor, and that is the Dodge Durango. That is surprisingly fun to drive. We drove it in the big Hellcat flavor, yes, but we also drove it in the RT flavor a few years back.
Oh, the Durango.
Those are out there, and they're used, and you could just get one. Big V8. It's got some personality. It is a solid six-seater. It's not a 7 or 8. It's a solid six-seater.
It's about the size of the MDX, really,
inside. But it's got personality to it.
Yeah.
So Dodge Durango is a really good option for
you.
That's
great,
I think you could balance that with, getting, maybe you get a little bit used Durango and you buy yourself an MX-5 RF. because you need something. Sure. You guys are design people. You like really pretty designs. You're talking about some of these older designs that really speak to you. Park an RF in your driveway, and you and your wife are going to be like, that's our car? That thing is our car?
Just sit out there looking at it.
It's so pretty. So yeah. MX-5 RF is my like design choice for you. Yes, you can go through any of the cheap sports cars in our cheap sports car challenge. Look at that 8-car Comparo. The Z3 and Z4, what is your preference on styling? Those are out there for a song compared to a brand new RF. The Miata, of course, the Boxster, the Cayman, all of these are viable for 20 to 30 grand if you're spending 30 to 40 on a Durango, a Palisade, or I hate to say it, a minivan. With some coilovers and some tires, apparently, yeah.
P0s on that thing, like, really, step it up, huh? Let's see, over on some questions on social media, Chris Quick on Facebook asks if he's the only one who's getting tired of car magazines featuring electric cars, almost to the exclusion of other notable new cars coming out that are not yet or never will be fully EVs. Mm. The reality is, Chris's lifestyle will never really support an electric car, so these magazines appear to be ignoring the fact that not everyone is on the EV bandwagon.
Ooh.
You're right. Not everyone is.
Rakes and landmines. Rakes and landmines.
Yes, yeah. It's the ongoing discussion, but I appreciate that it's an ongoing discussion.
Yes, agreed.
And there is no definitive branded, this is the date on the milk carton.
Well,
that's the date we switch over.
They've
and all
tried
cars
to declare the dates, and all of the manufacturers are going, this is terrifying, and all of the infrastructure isn't ready.
We're seeing countries backpedal away from various agreements.
And companies are trying to create exceptions. I mean, that in spite of the fact that it's made a lot of worldwide press attention and a lot of politicians got a lot of good ink on their behalf for saying they were doing this, the declaration of plan versus the execution when most of these people will be out of office are starting to collide. just put it that way.
That's nicely put.
Yeah.
We're driving everything because we make discoveries and we do like the fact that when we discover something that's interesting and really a standout, we got to drive it all. We say yes to all the press cars.
For sure.
So yes, but it's an ongoing conversation that things will be changing a week from now. Things will change yet again.
True. And we keep being surprised by everything. Stuff that has, this just has an engine, stuff that has, you know, EV or plug-in EV or this is only a hybrid or whatever. We've had stuff. One of the things I like the most about not only this podcast, but the fact that we have the test drive channel where we literally say to the manufacturers, put it in the driveway. Doesn't matter what it is.
Don't care.
Yep. I love how much that has broadened you and I. I mean, we love the talk sports cars. That's what our whole original channel is dedicated to. That was, you know, Everyday Driver has always been a little sports car focused, but I love that we drive everything because it keeps us broader. And I am surprised how often we get surprised.
Yeah, it's cool.
You know, we get into some vehicle that we're both like, I don't know about this. And we're like, you know, okay, I see this person they built this for. Not me, but I see that person over there. I see them waving. They built it for them.
Well, John McInnes wonders if manufacturers will keep production low to keep demand and thus prices high.
Oh.
Well, I suppose you could, whatever it is, gas-powered, EVs, whatever it is. You know, we wonder about BMW sometimes and their plans to...
We wonder about them a lot, actually. No, sorry, but anyway, Audrey, yeah.
I mean... Sometimes I guess their sales projections we just have to meet this low number and they shoot for that. But engineering a car and tooling and building it is very expensive. Mm-hmm. And that's why we see a lot of cars that are built on the same platform. That's why the globalization of platforms. So once you crash test something, shoot, we can just plop another body on that.
You're right.
Don't have to go through all the same kinds of standards. I mean, it still does to a point, but it really depends on the car. And Ferrari is notable for this since the beginning. Ferrari's always kept production low. They figure out how many wealthy people on the planet can afford this car, and they build one less.
True, yeah.
Well, can afford it and want one, and then will therefore buy it, and then they make one less car than they figure out what their market is. I don't know that every manufacturer is like that because they don't have the luxury of being in Formula One. They don't have the luxury of being the nameplate that they are. Many companies... just want to sell cars. And sometimes, in the case of BMW, they said with that 1M in 2011, we're just going to build a handful of cars worldwide.
Yep, we're going to stop.
And then demand came in to the point where they kept the factory on, and they built like 8,000 of them. Well, that sweet cash was coming in, and they really liked those sweet orders, the sweet order book there.
Getting good press, too.
You know, maybe we should keep building these. So it's nice for companies on one hand to say that. In certain cases, it keeps production low. In some cases, they can't build too many of them. And, yeah, I mean, what if Bugatti were like, you know what? Chiron's for all.
Everybody, line up right here. The line starts here.
Yeah, the line would end at some point there. There would be a back of the line.
Are you the back? Sorry, it's been a while. Are you the back of the Chiron line?
But in the case of like Hellcat powered anything, it just seems like Dodge, Stellantis couldn't make enough of them. Mm. And they tried to shut it off. Like, no, this is the last. And that sweet cash keeps pouring on in the door. Yeah. So they're like, maybe we'll keep the factory on.
Akim is asking us a great question. By the way, Akim is one of the people that's going to join us, hopefully, for a meetup we're going to have right after our pilgrimage trip somewhere around downtown Frankfurt on, that's a Friday night. I think it is the 9th. I'm going to look at a calendar real quick to make sure I'm not leading you astray. But on the end of our pilgrimage trip, which is Friday the 9th, that evening, for those of you that can get to Frankfurt that night, we'd love to connect with you and just go to dinner and just connect. That'd be really awesome. I'm not sure if Akim can join us, but he often does, so it's cool to have him write in. He says, interesting conversation starter. Is going from car reviews to travel adventures the natural progression for car shows? Top Gear did it. We've done it. Now others are following along. Interesting. Huh. Now, Akim, here's the reason. The short answer here, I think, is yes. And here's the reason. You and I, our first road trip ever was Mid-Engines and Mountains in 2014.
It was 2014?
2014. Because really? we did 911s in 2013. The next year was when the Alpha came out, and we fought most of the year to get the Alpha on camera, and it was 2014. Alpha 4C, one of the first ones in the fleet, the Cayman, and the Elise. And we went and did some of the best roads in this year. I would love to return to that trip. It's such a cool trip.
We could.
It'd be very fun. Yeah. Now we have a drone. We could really show those roads off.
Yes.
I need to dive bomb one of those roads. Anyway, side note. But so that was 2014. So we've been doing road trips of some type a lot. The next year we did the pilgrimage trip, which was a road trip.
That's true. We've been doing it for a long time. Yeah.
But here's the reason, Akim, and the reason that we're actually looking at road trips more. I mean, think about it. We bought our cheap sedans. We road tripped it. We bought our cheap sports cars. We road tripped it. Here's the thing that happens.
Road tripped our cars of the past.
Yeah.
We're going to road trip the Corvette.
You better believe it. Here's why it's happening, and here's why I think Top Gear and others do it. When all you're doing is reviewing cars, and we get, thankfully, a constant flow of all kinds of things to the driveway. When all you're doing is reviewing cars, it does have some level of repetition. Even if the cars get crazy, like this week we have a crazy SUV, and next week we have a minivan, and next week we have a hypercar. Mm-hmm. It's still kind of the same structure. And some channels, if you look at it, the structure is identical. They have a format. They plug the car on the same road in the same format. It's going to be the exact same next week. Now, sometimes that works really well, but you and I are creative enough and wanting to have brain engagement enough that every now and then we're just like, let's do something different. Mm-hmm. And the easiest thing to come to, if you're Top Gear and you've reviewed every car on the planet on your own private runway, what else can we do with a car? Well, what do cars do? They take you places.
Yeah.
And so you go, well, what's a trip we could do that could be fun that we could share with the audience? The progression is very, very natural. That's why you and I are enjoying them so much. Plus, it has given us a lot of excitement because we have picked places on the map we either haven't been to or haven't been to since we were kids or have heard about or whatever. And so there's a discovery about it. This is probably the safest exploration on the planet. We're taking major freeways. We're staying in hotels. There's no camping in the wilds anywhere, okay?
There's no Ewan McGregor kinds
This is not Long Way Round or Long Way Anywhere.
Yeah.
But it's really fun, and hopefully it freshens things up. It gets us excited. Hopefully you guys want to be along with us. That's the reasoning.
See on Instagram, Nick Bursick asks if we've driven a Morgan Plus 4. Seems like a viable alternative and oddball for the two-seat cruiser. Yes, it is an oddball. No, we don't see very many Morgans. I mean, actually none.
Yeah.
You know, it's weird because if I'm driving a car that looks old, I want it to be old.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
It's weird to have this 2022 plus four. It's got a new bonded aluminum chassis, but then there's still that ashwood frame old. Sits on top of the chassis and then the panels over the top of that. So it looks old, but it's just like the late 80s car. Practically the same car.
Interesting.
And I guess that's kind of old now, but not in terms of the classics and what this is designed to look like. This looks like it was from the 30s or 40s, maybe. I want something like that, I guess. But, you know, I might change my mind after driving it. I might suddenly become a Morgan freak because I have this history of sort of dumping on.
Yes, and then driving one and being like, now, wait a minute.
Wait, hang on.
That's good.
So I might pull a Hammond and switch over to Morgan. I don't know.
H2O on Instagram says, what would we consider the next best beginner sports car after the 86 and the Miata? Now, here's the question. Have you driven the 86 and the Miata? Have you driven them hard? Have you driven them to the edges? Because the problem is, as you step up, what generally comes with that is power, which also brings speed. And the issue is, if you're really going to drive a car hard, a lot of the cars have gotten so capable and so easy to drive that as the speed piles on, it's just a number. It's like this disconnected video game thing until something goes wrong. And now you're going at an incredibly high rate of speed that wouldn't be possible in an 86 or a Miata. Those cars are really fun because you can get them out of shape and you can bring them back. And there'll be times, if you're doing a parking lot or a racetrack or whatever, there'll be times you'll get them out of shape and you might not get it back.
Where's the reset button?
But it's fairly inexpensive. The speeds are much lower, so that's a good thing. So when I hear beginner, I feel like you need to be past beginner to start stepping up beyond those. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, 86 and Miata, you could be the best racer at your local track and you'll still find those cars rewarding. Mm. We can step up into the Supra with a manual is excellent. A Corvette, pick your generation, 5, 6, 7, even the 8. Mm-hmm, okay, mm-hmm. But we're up into 400 or 500 horsepower now, which is a lot. And I would argue too much for a beginner of any kind. But our friend Nate that helps us on the show has done all kinds of stuff over the years.
Yes.
He had a crazy tuned FRS.
Yeah.
And he stepped up to a Corvette C6. He got everything he could get out of an FRS. He stepped up to a Corvette because now he has more GT quality for he and his wife to have a nice night out. But if he wants to go to the track, there's performance there.
I like what you're saying. That's our new t-shirt. Drive it to the edges.
Let's hope it.
Drive it to the edges.
And then pull back. Pull it back.
Right. Guys, thank you so much for all your questions. EverydayDriverTV@gmail.com is the place to write to us with your Topic Tuesdays, your car conclusions, and most of all your car debates. And then social media questions, of course. What's on your mind? What's in the news? Yep. We love talking about all that kind of current stuff. So write to us. We're looking forward to hearing from you. And we're looking forward to next time. Cheers, everyone.